If you want to have a coup against the constitutional order, you want to control the capital city. And if he has control of the policing in the city of Washington, you know, there's no, how do you stop him? Who's going to tell him to leave the White House?
Hello, everyone. Welcome to George Conway Explains It All to Sarah Longwell. He's George Conway. I am not Sarah Longwell. I'm her best friend, JVL. I'm practically as good as her. George, we got to start by talking about a new American hero, Sandwich Man.
Hero. G-Y-R-O?
Yeah, well, maybe. He has been arrested for assault with a deadly weapon.
Yeah, he's been charged with a felony. I don't know what exactly the felony is called.
But. So the fellow's name is Sean Charles Dunn. By now, everybody has seen the video and heard the story. He was a little bit in his cups, and he's himself as a lawyer, employee of the Department of Justice, and he was having some words with some agents of the state, and he threw his, I believe it was a Subway, unclear to me if it was a turkey club or not.
I think it had salami in it. I read carefully some of the news stories, and I think there was salami in the sandwich.
At the officer's armored chest plate.
And yes, right
was
here.
Then chased down and arrested. He offered to come and turn himself into the police. They said, no, we want to send like a full battalion to your apartment to perp walk you. And he has now been charged with a felony assault. And I mean, look, nothing that we do on this podcast is legal advice. And I am sure that you would never encourage anybody to throw any sort of bakery baked goods or deli meats at anyone.
At anybody. No, I agree. I mean, he deserves to, he deserves to be arrested and charged. But a felony, I'm not so sure. On the other hand, I've never tried to get mayo stains off a Kevlar vest. So, that could be an extenuating circumstance calling for, harshness here.
I mean, I guess I have some questions for you. What about beating a cop with a baton? Would that be something that somebody should be charged with felony assault for and maybe should be going?
Yeah, I think actually that could go, that's kind of a jail kind of thing, I think. I mean, I think sandwich would be like work at a sandwich, like at a soup kitchen, serving sandwiches.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
For like a couple of weeks.
What about hitting an officer with bear spray? Once you're in the United States Capitol, I guess what I'm trying to get out of here, of course, is the insanity of the, and I guess, you're not going to be able to give me a satisfactory answer. I know that, but I have to ask the question anyway. How is it that we live in a world where the application of the law is so obviously uneven? Aren't there like legal principles against like uneven application of the law? Like, like in copyright law, for instance, I know that if somebody who holds a copyright does not enforce their copyright for like 50 years and then suddenly they try to enforce it against one person, the court is unlikely to fine for them because you have to assert that right and hold it and enforce it over the course of many years in order to establish that you really are not using it maliciously. Is there anything like that in criminal law? Like, are prosecutors really allowed to do this?
Yes. The answer is yes. They're allowed to exercise discretion, and that discretion is fundamentally not reviewable. I mean, there could be extreme circumstances where, where you have a situation where a court might find selective prosecution, but that is so rare. Because if you start comparing cases, there are infinite number of differences and similarities, and different people can reasonably and sometimes unreasonably place different values on those factors. And then, of course, things change over time because sometimes all of a sudden pickpocketing might become a problem. So you want to crack down on pickpocketing. You set an example. Could be that we're afraid of more sandwiches. So maybe that's the idea. There's a rash of sandwich assaults, which there hasn't been. And the courts are really, really hesitant to look into that. And the kind of thing that you're talking about with copyright is sort of a, it's sort of a sitting on your rights thing. If, for example, you let some kids cross your backyard, right? And they cut a path right for your backyard and they do it for years and people have been doing it for years. You know, there's this law, rule of adverse possession where they get the right to do that because it's just, you didn't put up a fence one day a year, but that it doesn't really extend to the criminal law in the context of consistency of application. We rely very heavily, since we have an adversarial system, on the decisions of prosecutors, which makes it very, very important that prosecutors not be politicized.
But there are cases, right, where these sorts of things become so egregious that the courts will step in, right? I mean, if a police department only ever writes speeding tickets for Black people.
Yes. Well, then you write, you only write speeding tickets for people with Obama stickers on their car, you know, but that's a situation where you're treading on other constitutional rights other than the right of due process or just overall fairness. You're talking about equal protection or the First Amendment. A case of selective prosecution is much, much stronger when you have some kind of prohibited category of differentiation that the state is engaging in, like race discrimination or political discrimination.
So it has to be here, like a defined discrimination.
Right. And here it's the guy threw a sandwich at a cop. And the difference between him and some other case is there were different cops on different days and different, you're comparing two situations. If he were the only sandwich guy who got prosecuted and he got prosecuted because he was wearing a Kamala Harris shirt, maybe you'd have a case, but there really isn't one here. The one thing that might happen, interestingly, is a grand jury could refuse to indict it on the grounds that, oh, come on, this isn't a felony. And there were at least one instance I read about recently where somebody accused of essentially the same thing, but with something other than a sandwich. The grand jury in the District of Columbia refused to indict. So, you know, if you get that same grand jury, Jeanine Pirro could have a problem there.
I mean, do you suffer from the same cognitive dissonance that I have, where we have the police becoming increasingly militarized because of all of the supposed threats they face, and then at the same time becoming more and more sensitive to things which aren't actual threats? Like, it's like, you know, we need body armor and MRAPs because everything is so dangerous, and also, if somebody throws a sandwich at me, I now have to charge them with a felony. Like, it is, like, absurd.
It is. And that's sort of, you know, what we have is, I mean, it's like dealing with a narcissist, right? The narcissists always try to provoke you into getting angry at them. And then when you do, you're the person to blame. And so it's like what the government is doing to the public, essentially, is provoking the public. And I mean, this guy worked in the Justice Department, for crying out loud, and he was provoked. And so it becomes kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. You engage in behavior that makes people mad, and then they act on the upset, which they probably shouldn't do, but they're human. And then it becomes a justification for more repression. And that's kind of a scary cycle that we're seeing here. And these cops really are these additions to the Metropolitan Police, whether they be National Guard or other federal police forces, they're not really trained to handle life on the streets. And they're as much as anything there for show. And I thought there was a, somebody, the New York Times, I think it was, or Peter Baker tweeted this out a map of locations where these forces mm-hmm. were congregated, and they weren't anywhere near the high crime areas of the city of Washington. They were on the Washington Mall and downtown near the White House, which is actually a high crime area. But because of what happens inside the fence.
Right. I was going to say inside the White House is a high crime area.
High crime area,
not
yes.
Not so much outside. Now, again, not legal advice, but...
don't throw sandwiches at cops. I agree with that.
Don't throw sandwiches at anybody.
Right.
I mean, really, you shouldn't throw sandwiches, right? You
know,
food, food insecurity
it's
is real.
Food.
You should donate
yes.
them.
But the price of food is going up.
If people wanted to resist, they could carry sandwiches around. They could open carry sandwiches
yes,
around.
You can open carry sandwiches.
And maybe sort of, do this when they're walking past the police. And, am I going to take a bite of my sandwich? Oh, are you scared? Are you so scared, little boy?
Yeah, I would kind of keep my distance from the police officer. But, I mean, it could be the sandwich could become the symbol of, this could be the sandwich revolution, I guess. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I want people to understand.
Did you see the drawings of somebody throwing a sandwich like a football?
I did. Yeah, the Banksy thing. I want people to understand, the reason I'm so cheesed off about this stuff is because while we have Sandwich Guy being charged with felony assault, we have, at the same time, the President of these United States going onto his Truth Social account, demanding that Tina Peters be freed. Free Tina Peters. People who don't remember, Tina Peters was a elections officer in the state. Where is she?
Colorado.
That's right.
I don't remember what county, but
in 2021, she used a stolen badge to sneak a truth teller into secure areas and give him access to election data, which then somehow found its way up to the MyPillow guy. And she was convicted, charged and convicted, sentenced to 9 years in jail. Here is our president. Free Tina Peters, a brave and innocent patriot who has been tortured by crooked Colorado politicians. Let Tina Peters out of jail right now. She did nothing wrong except catching the Democrats cheat in the election. She is an old woman and very sick. If she is not released, I am going to take harsh measures. I feel like we live in a world where the sandwich guy is charged with a felony, and then the president of the United States issues an open threat against the state of Colorado. I mean, if you don't do what I demand that you do, then I'm going to take harsh measures. And everyone's just like, eh, this won't even make the New York Times tomorrow. This is why I say unwise things, like everybody should carry sandwiches around, because we're living in the upside down.
Absolutely. And what's awful, what's dangerous about all of this is that we are losing, people are losing their sensitivity to this abominable inconsistency. And they're, you know, they're getting conditioned to see things operate in this manner. And I think the big danger, for example, in DC with all the police officers and the National Guard troops is, you know, they're roughing up a few people here and there. Maybe some of them deserve to be arrested. Like there was this guy who apparently was a child, charged with child molesting, and he got roughed up by the mall. And some of them may be here illegally. Some of them may be entitled, and some of them may not be. But the real problem, as I see it, is that if Donald Trump gets control of policing in the Capitol to the extent that he seems to desire, which is he wants complete control because that's just the way he is. He wants complete control of anything he deems important to him. Think about the consequences of that, because what would have happened if he had had that kind of control on January 6th when he didn't call out the National Guard to defend the Capitol? What if he actually did have control of the Metropolitan Police and the National Guard in the way that he wants?
George, what would have happened on January 20th, 2021, if he had had control of the place.
He would have remained in office because there would not have been the election of Joe Biden on January 6th. And he would have declared an emergency. And lo and behold, what do you do when you have an emergency? You call in the National Guard. Mm-hmm. He would have never left. And that's the scary aspect of this. I mean, some people were saying that what they're doing in D.C. is going to be a model for other cities. But I think they're just cutting straight to the chase, because if you want to have a coup, right, against the constitutional order, I'm not saying Donald Trump would want that. Oh, wait a minute. He did. He tried that once. You want to control the capital city and all the buildings and all the offices. It's sort of like, did you ever watch the movie Valkyrie, or did you ever read about July 20th, 1944? Mm-hmm. The whole crux of the plot to overthrow Hitler depended on the loyalty and who was giving the orders to something called the Home Army, which was this basically battalion, I don't know what strength it was, of troops in Berlin that were there solely for the purpose of controlling the city in the event somebody tried to overthrow the government. Now, normally you would think that's a good thing because we don't want people overthrowing the government, but here we have somebody who wants to overthrow the Constitution. He's in charge of the government, and he wants to overstay his welcome. He already did that once. You know, it's called historians and social scientists call it a self-coup, or an autogulp. You know, there's no reason he's not going to try to do that again. And, you know, if his ankles hold up, and if he has control of the policing in the city of Washington, you know, there's no, how do you stop them? Who's going to tell them to leave the White House?
You really are spending too much time with me. This show is sponsored by Mudwater. So you all know I'm on a constant hamster wheel of podcasting and writing and then writing and then podcasting and then kids and then the more kids and you have to do dinner with them. And I need a daily energy boost that keeps me sharp without the caffeine jitters of coffee. I found Mudwater and I'm cranking out my best paywalled newsletter ever, without feeling on edge all afternoon. Their OG blend is a mix of cacao, chai, turmeric, and adaptogenic mushrooms to help you feel focused without the crash. And the best part, it's amazing over ice. Seriously, just mix it with cold water or milk, shake it up, pour it over ice, and boom, you've got yourself a refreshing, feel-good boost that actually helps you stay balanced. Every single ingredient in Mudwater's products are 100% USDA certified organic, non-GMO, gluten-free, vegan, and kosher. There's also zero sugar and no sweeteners added. The best part about Mudwater is it provides sustained energy without the spikes and crash of traditional coffee. There's also caffeine-free blends available. Mudwater is available at Target and Sprouts locations across the U.S., so it's never been easier to grab a cup of this friendly pick-me-up. Ready to make the switch to cleaner energy? Head to mudwater.com and grab your starter kit today, right now. Our listeners get an exclusive deal up to 43% off your entire order, plus free shipping and a free rechargeable frother when you use code ASKGEORGE. That's right, up to 43% off with code ASKGEORGE at MUDWTR.com. After your purchase, they'll ask you how you found them. Please show your support and let them know we sent you. Keep your energy natural and refreshing all year long with Mudwater, because life's too short for anything less than clean, delicious energy. All right. So, I mean, while we're talking about National Guard units in D.C., I tried to make a little trouble this week by suggesting that since we have this weirdness, so we need National Guard units in the nation's capital. And so the president is asking National Guard units to travel all the way from deep into the Confederacy, from Mississippi and South Kakalaki and West Virginia and Ohio, and not just asking Maryland. Maryland is right there. You get this nice governor, a nice gentleman, Wes Moore. They're literally across the street from Chevy Chase. You just, you know, walk across the street, you get to Maryland. Why do you think that is? And, like, again, this is another, like, Is there a remedy? Is there a way to stop this? Could Democratic governors say, hey, why don't you guys take our forces? We'll volunteer our National Guard because we trust them to not be, you know, trigger happy or whatnot.
The problem is that the governors can do this. They have the authority to do this if they, you know, to give permission for their troops to be used, you know, as federal forces somewhere. I mean, there are limits on it. Of course, the Posse Comitatus Act would limit their use in for purposes of law enforcement. But I don't think the Democratic governors will do it because they don't want their troops, they don't want their state's troops to be put under the command of this administration for purposes that they don't agree with. And, you know, again, there's a lot of performative aspects of this. There are a lot of performative aspects to this because it's the chance for red state governors to show their fealty to the leader. And it's a very, very disturbing trend. And particularly in a situation where you just do not have, you know, any real emergency here. Yes, crime has always been too high in major cities and is too high in the District of Columbia. Let's not be, you know, let's not be silly and deny the reality of it. But crime is lower than it was during the first Trump administration. The city is in better shape than it was in 2020. I mean, the city was going to hell in 2020, partly because of COVID. And it's been much, much worse. I remember I'm dating myself here, in 1984, traveling.
I remember the 80s?
Oh my gosh, the 80s. I had just graduated from college, and two classmates and I decided we were going to drive around the country. We stayed here in Washington, D.C. and saw the Beach Boys play, I think, on July 4th. And we stayed at a YMCA, like three or four blocks north of the White House. And it was a war zone, a complete freaking war zone. There were now within walking distance of the White House, you've got Ferragamo, a Tesla store, it's really, really nice. They're beautiful hotels that were never even dreamed of there. But back then, it was Skid Row. And this was just three or four blocks from the White House in 1984. You know, it was morning again in America, just about. And, you know, and I'm sure the crime rate was much, much higher than it is today. I remember even in the 90s, I mean, you go down Mass Ave from like DuPont Circle down to Union Station. That was, you know, that was just, it was desolate. Okay, it was desolate, empty, lots of dirt and bombed out buildings right north of Mass Ave. And now it's just this beautiful apartment buildings. This city has never, you know, this city in my lifetime, I don't think this city has ever looked better.
So I got questions for you.
And Donald Trump was taking credit for that in May.
Sure. Sure. Well, you know, he did say that D.C. was the most dangerous city in the world. And then within a few hours of taking it over, it became the safest city in the world. So,
right. America was great again in just a matter of, you know,
it's amazing.
As soon as he said the oath.
So other states can say, correct me if I'm wrong, other states can send their National Guard into D.C. because D.C. is not a state. Could Ohio send its National Guard into Maryland? Or is that the kind of thing that is prohibited?
I don't actually know the answer to that question. I think there may be, that's beyond my ken. I didn't read up on that for this. We may get there, but.
Because I'm not going to lie, I'm a little worried about that sort of thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't gone through the statutes on this. There are they can be complex. But, you know, this was. And there may be issues with the deployment of the National Guard in D.C. I mean, there was some writing about that in 2020 when there were civil disturbances in Washington, D.C., the Black Lives Matter protests. And you know, there were National Guardsmen called into D.C. And there was some writing about it at the time about what exactly the legal parameters are. And I haven't reviewed that lately, but I think we're all going to have to learn a little bit more about that, because we're going to see all the boundaries pushed in the way that they've been pushing it in DC, and they pushed it with the, you know, the Metropolitan Police trying to take over the Metropolitan Police.
What a time to be alive. I wonder, so it has happened once or twice before that National Guard members have been deputized as deputy U.S. Marshals. This happened in January of 2025 in advance of Trump's inauguration. Is that to get around posse comitatus?
It may very well be. I'm not familiar with that particular practice.
Rare.
Yeah, I mean, they're looking for ways to get around restrictions on the use of the military domestically. I mean, one thing they're doing is they're trying to get employees at the DOD to sign up for stints at ICE, for example. They're trying to do that. And because apparently maybe they may be having recruitment problems. I mean, you know, I mean, who wants to go around wearing a mask and having people yell at them and throw sandwiches?
I think a lot of people do, George.
Oh, okay. But
maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, maybe I'm thinking, see, this is, you always beat the optimism out of me. I appreciate that. Bring me back to reality.
This show also brought to you by HexClad. I'm always talking about how much cooking goes on in my house, and one of the ongoing headaches with that is choosing between a stainless steel pan, which is more durable, and a nonstick pan, which is easier to clean up and also to cook on. That's why we started using HexClad. It's got the performance of stainless steel with the convenience of nonstick all in one pan. It's easy to clean, dishwasher safe, and simple to wipe clean after each use. It's oven safe, able to handle heat up to 500 degrees. HexClad products come with a lifetime warranty. They literally last a lifetime. Their patented hexagon design protects against scratches, even when using metal utensils. My endorsement here isn't good enough for you. Gordon Ramsay uses HexClad at his restaurants and his home. If you don't know how tough a critic Gordon Ramsay is, just Google him. For limited time only, our listeners get 10% off your order with our exclusive link. Just head to hexclad.com/askgeorge. Support our show and check them out at hexclad.com/askgeorge. Make sure to let them know we sent you. Bon appetit. Let's eat with HexClad's revolutionary cookware. All right. So we're just going to keep, there's so many legal angles in the DC occupation. We also had Pam Bondi trying to make herself the chief of police of the Metro Police in DC. I want you to walk me through what happened. So this wound up getting backed off, and instead we have the DEA chief is now a designee and not the actual chief, and the sitting DC chief of police is sort of in charge of day-to-day operations, but isn't the final say. Can you just explain to me what this all is and how this happened and what it means?
Yeah, I mean, basically, there were three orders. The first was an executive order signed by President Trump, in which he invoked Section 740 of the D.C. Home Rule Act to make use of the Metropolitan Police. And let me explain what the D.C. Home Rule Act is. Essentially, it's a statute. It's the code. The D.C. code is something that, it's part of the DC code that enacted by Congress that governs what DC can do on its own as the result of power delegated to the District of Columbia, which is a creation of federal law, creation of the Constitution, and subject to regulation by Congress. Section 740 provides that the President of the United States can avail himself of services of an emergency nature from the Metropolitan Police Department of the District of Columbia for basically up to 30 days. And it's very narrowly worded in the sense that it refers to services of an emergency nature. Emergency is a little broader, and courts are going to cut the president leeway as to what is an emergency. Although here, I think you could argue that there really wasn't anything different on after the emergency was declared than before the emergency, except that Big Balls got beaten up on the street somewhere. So I don't know. Big Balls getting kicked is an emergency. But anyway, yeah. So what
like
happened
tariffs
was...
tariffs emergency, right? This is
everything's an emergency. Everything, right. Everything is an emergency because there are all sorts of, you know, there are all sorts of laws, understandably, that say the president could do some things under in emergency circumstances, which makes, you know, should make sense with a normal president. Here, what the president did was he issued an executive order saying crime is out of control, and he parrots the statute. And then he puts Pam Bondi in charge of addressing all of this. Bondi, you know, at the first reaction of the District of Columbia is, well, we don't really like this, but so far we haven't really been told to do anything differently than we're doing. So we're just going to, you know, we're just going to sit here. Then Bondi fucked up. She issued an order that appointed this DEA guy chief of police, or the effective designate as the federal government's chief of police of the District of Columbia, which the statute says nothing about. The statute doesn't say that. And there were a whole bunch of other things in the order that basically said that, you know, we're taking control of the Metropolitan Police Department lock, stock, and barrel, in effect. And when you go back to the statute, they're not contesting whether there's an emergency here, which was kind of smart. And also, you go back to the statute, services. Well, services would be, you know, have the Metro Police surround the Justice Department because somebody's trying to break in with a sandwich, right? So you could, so they issue, Bondi issues that overbroad order that really isn't tailored to the statute. And DC then sues, saying this order, the Bondi order, not the executive order, the Bondi order is illegal because it doesn't connect up with the statute, the enabling statute, section 740, the terms of 740. And they went in, they filed suit, I think maybe Friday morning. I was immediately after she issued the order. And the Judge Reyes here in the District of Columbia, U.S. District Court, heard them that day and basically said, I'm going to issue the temporary restraining. They move for a temporary restraining order, the district. And basically, I'm going to grant this because I don't see how this some of the stuff in Bondi's order can be squared with this plain provision, Section 740, because you're not just having the police department provide some services. You're taking it, you're purporting to take control of it lock, stock, and barrel. But she didn't issue the order immediately. She basically said, and judges frequently do this in emergency situations, or at least, you know, TRO situations. We used to, in Delaware, as a corporate lawyer, a corporate litigator, we used to do this all the time, where the judge says, you don't want me issuing this order. You're at risk here. Why don't you guys just work this out? Because it then saves the judge from having to make a decision and try to parse everything out. But you're signaling one party or both parties that you have risk in this litigation and you should work it out. And you have until six o'clock or whatever she said. You have until a certain time, work this out, or else I'm going to issue a TRO. And lo and behold, Bondi caved. Understandably, because she didn't have it was just incompetence on her part to have issued that order to begin with. And then she basically issued a much milder order that was much more arguably consistent with Section 740 and arguably more consistent with the executive order that purportedly gave her all this authority, that basically said the DEA guy is going to be the liaison to the chief of police so the government can request services of these sort, and enlisted some services like, you know, picking up illegal aliens. And at that point, that was the end of the litigation, but it was a major, major misstep by the Justice Department, really incompetent lawyering, I think, and just overreaching as they are wont to do. And it was good that the DC scored a victory by kind of, you know, they didn't go in guns a-blazing on the question of an emergency, which is a risky proposition before any district judge, because it's like, I don't want to, people don't want to say you know, the president does have discretion to figure out what's important to him and what's important to the country, because he's president, and judges don't like to second guess that at that level. But the terms of the Bondi order, which are so egregiously inconsistent with the statute and inconsistent with the executive order, frankly, that, you know, there was a misstep by Bondi and she had to cave. That being said, there's still that problem that we talked about earlier of he's aspiring to take control of the DC Police Department. And that could be done. President says he's going to be seeking statutory authority in Congress to do that. And what if the Democrats in the Senate, enough of them cave and they don't fight back and they let this happen because they're afraid of being perceived as soft on crime, you could end up with something not so good. And that gets us back into the home army scenario that we talked about earlier. So none of this is, you know, I mean, it was a temporary victory for the District of Columbia, but none of this is good.
All right. Show also brought to you by OneSkin. You know you need to protect your skin from the sun, but what if you could protect it from things like collagen loss and inflammation, and even repair some of the damage you did when you were younger? The good news is that you can, something I learned from my scientist friends at OneSkin. I've been using their whole line of mineral SPFs for the face, body, and lips lately. Not only do they protect your skin from UV damage now, they work at the cellular level to help repair sun damage I did in my teens and 20s. I've been at the beach, so I've needed good skincare. Let me tell you, my skin feels smoother and looks more even. George, do you have anything you'd like to share about OneSkin?
It's I use it morning and night. I am a OneSkin fanatic. I put it in little containers and take it with me, although I could use the OneSkin container. It's perfectly easy to transport. And I never used skin moisturizers before, and I should have, because I'm too old. And now I use it and my skin is better. It absolutely is.
And Bubba, you look great.
Thank you.
Never looked better. The face SPF is super lightweight, breathable, and comes in tinted or untinted. The body SPF is water resistant and helps prevent collagen loss. And the new lip SPF hydrates instantly and is scientifically proven to keep your lips healthy, bouncy, and firm. The whole line is made with mineral non-nano zinc oxide antioxidants like vitamin C and the OS01 peptide, so you get protection, nourishment, and repair in one simple step. OneSkin was founded in 2016 by an all-woman team of scientists with PhDs in skin regeneration, stem cell biology, immunology, and bioinformatics. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. For a limited time, you can try OneSkin with 15% off using code ASKGEORGE at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code ASKGEORGE. After your purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support your show and tell them we sent you. You said a couple times that it was probably wise that the district did not go in guns a-blazing, challenging the very foundation of the emergency, right? But why not fight for every single inch of ground? Because this is what the Trump administration does, right? And the Trump administration, as we've seen over, you know, with the birthright citizenship and everything, they won't concede any point. They'll fight every technicality all the way.
Absolutely.
So why shouldn't everybody else do the same?
That's a very good question. And I know a lot of people, very good lawyers, who basically said, you know, if you're going to go to Vienna, go to Vienna. If you're going to take Vienna, take Vienna. I think the problem here is the uniquely exposed situation that the District of Columbia is in. Because it is, you know, it's not a state. It is totally at the mercy of Congress. The Home Rule Act could be repealed tomorrow if there are enough votes. Okay? Because the Constitution of the United States gives Congress absolute power over deciding how the District of Columbia is to be ruled.
All right, one more question. This is a conservative history question for you. I don't know where you were on the DC statehood question 25 years ago. I was, you know, I never really had strong thoughts about it, but to the extent that I did think about it, I thought, well, I don't know, like, it seems to have worked out pretty well so far. The framers probably had a good reason for it. Like, I'm not going to spend a lot of clock cycles thinking about this. Like, you know, what's the harm in letting DC stay as DC? Now, having seen that the potential harm is that a malicious president could send in National Guard troops from Confederate states to throttle businesses and oppress the citizens, I kind of think DC statehood is now an absolute no-brainer.
I have to say, I absolutely agree with that. I mean, I was like, I always rolled my eyes at the no taxation without representation license plate. Was that what they, remember they used to have those?
Yeah, that was it. That was under Clinton.
It's like,
Clinton
come on, you live in a nice city. You could choose if you know, you can move to Fairfax if you want, or you can move to Bethesda if you want, if you want to vote for a member of Congress. I mean, what's the big deal? No one says you have to live in the District of Columbia. And, that was always my view too. It's like it's a totally understandable that the framers wanted.
It's not like we're ever going to have a president who tries to subjugate the people of.
Right, right, and people, you know, members of Congress have to live there too, at least part time, and it's like it worked and it made sense. The framers had it was there was a logic to it, right? I mean, you didn't want to create. You know, particularly when you only had 13 states, you didn't want to give one state this advantage of like having the capital. So, right, it was New York and Philadelphia, but the southern states didn't like that. So they basically just took a swamp on this river and made it the capital and filled in the swamp. Makes sense. And make it federal territory. It makes absolutely sense. I mean, you know, the Australians kind of do that too. They have the Australian Capital Territory, although I think it gets representation in the Australian Parliament. So I always felt that way. Like, yeah, I don't see why. And it sort of seemed more like a political ploy so the Democrats could get two more senators. But now it's like, yeah, I'll give them Puerto Rico. I'll give them DC. Let's split up California. Let's do it all. I mean, it's like, you know, I mean, Guam. Yeah. Guam. I'm the Virgin Islands, whoever.
Merge the Dakotas.
More states. Yes. Yeah. Let's, you know, if we're going to take over Canada, let's make it 55 more states.
Oh, how far we've all come.
Oh, yes. No, we have been driven to, we live in a world that's unrecognizable.
Even aside from the like Senate political calculus, just the basic fairness of trying to protect DC residents and businesses, because we now have proven that America can elect an autocratic president who will persecute the people who live in Washington, D.C. It just seems like they deserve some protections of statehood.
They're persecuting the people of D.C. to show. For performative reasons, but resulting in a power structure that could be used to basically permanently entrench him in power. It's really terrifying.
And we'd be safer against that sort of thing if DC were a state. We got like three other things on our map, but I'm only going to do two of them. The first is, again, in the question of fight everything. We had a DC Circuit Court decision at the appeals court level, reversing the lower court on the question of USAID cuts. And this was the judges determined that the plaintiffs didn't have standing. And so this was not they say the district court erred in granting that relief because the grantees lack a cause of action to press their claims. They say only the head of the Government Accountability Office has the authority to sue. So that's interesting, isn't it? To say there's only one person in the entire world who has standing to sue?
And I'm pretty sure that's wrong. And a woman who I know from decades ago wrote the dissent in that case. She was actually an associate or summer associate at my law firm back in New York in the 1990s. And I was completely unsuccessful in recruiting her. And now she's on the DC circuit and she wrote this fabulous dissent. What's weird about it is there were statutory claims and there were constitutional claims. The district court did not rule on whether or not the statutes gave these individuals the right to sue for their grants. She did say that there was a constitutional problem, which is, namely, that if Congress says money is to be spent on X, the president can't say, no, I'm not spending money on X, because Congress is, you know, one of the first enumerated powers in Article 1 is the power to spend money. And that, so there was a constitutional claim. And that's what the district court ruled. Funny thing was, the government takes the case up to the Court of Appeals, and Judge Pan, the dissenter, the woman I know, wrote this stinging criticism of what the majority did. Majority, the government didn't argue that there was no constitutional claim, even though that was the one real basis for the decision. So normally when you don't argue something in a court of appeals and you don't brief it and you don't cite cases and you don't make the points, you forfeit the argument. Okay? Whether or not, even if you're right, you forfeit the argument. Because we don't have judges going around trying to think up claims for parties. Right. That's not their role. Their role is to say, okay, what do you have to say? What do you have to say? And if you don't make an argument, that's normally it's tough shit. And here, the panel, the majority, made up this whole holding that there wasn't even, that there was no constitutional claim, which has got to be wrong. Because at a certain point, if the president is, there's a real separation of powers issue here when the president is refusing to obey a statute, say, requiring him to spend money. There's no question about that. There should be no question about it. So she had a number of very good points in the dissent, and I agree with that. And I think this case has a good chance of going to the full court. En banc is how they call it. I think it has a good chance of being overturned. But we'll see.
Well, it's something. And then the last thing, our redistricting palooza, we have, what are they calling it in the gavinmandering? Gavin Newsom's going to attempt to do. So Texas is going to go and ahead of schedule redistrict to try to hold the House for Republicans in 2026. Gavin Newsom has been warning that California, which has a nonpartisan, thank you for your attention to this matter. The California, which currently has a nonpartisan sort of panel to do districting, is like, we're going to have to do away with that to counteract Texas in kind of the same way that who was it? Was it Maine that was going to do away with their congressional vote to stop
that's the Electoral College years.
But same though, right? The states same, try well, to keep each other honest.
I think the difference between this and what happens every 10 years is what's getting lost is normally states do this after every census, and that's it for 10 years, right? Census comes out. The Census Bureau declares you have this many people, you have this many people, and then here where all the people are, and then the states have to basically draw new districts depending on whether they lose or gain representation because their population decreased or increased, and they also have to consistent with a case called Baker against Carr. they have to make sure that the districts have contain roughly the same number of people. So that requires redrawing. But that only normally only happens every 10 years. This is extremely unusual. I don't know to what extent it's ever happened before. This is redrawing districts in the middle of the 10-year period. Which is why it's so, that's the real reason why this is so bizarre. It's not that there isn't gerrymandering that goes on. Okay. There's always something, right? Oh, Congressman Schmo, he lives in this town, but if we draw the maps this way, he's going to be running against his fellow Democrat or fellow Republican, Congressman Schmuck. And so they'll, you know, figure out a way to rejigger the lines so that he doesn't have to move. Things like that, right? And yes, there is a, you know, obviously parties tend to favor themselves. Of course, there are other restrictions, like, again, the one-man, one-vote rule of Baker Grant's car, making sure the districts are roughly the same. And there's also a Voting Rights Act overlay, which says that basically you cannot do things to impair the representation of minorities, although there's a huge... You know, there are always huge fights over what that means. But what's unusual here is that it's happening in the middle of this 10-year period. And that's what's crazy about this. The other thing that's sort of interesting that's been pointed out, and we'll see to what extent it matters, is that one of the things that's sort of underlying the Republicans' desire to redraw is that they did better than they thought among Hispanics in Texas and elsewhere. And one of the interesting questions that some political demographers are asking is, well, the polls are showing that Hispanics are having a little bit of buyer's remorse from last November. And if this isn't done right, if the Republicans assume they're holding on to these voters and they're Republican voters, they could draw themselves districts that could hurt them, right, depending on how big the swing is. I don't know. I mean, that requires computer modeling of a sort that, you know, beyond my comprehension.
Just put it into ChatGPT. Just put it into ChatGPT.
Yeah. Oh, asking. No, Grok. Grok. Grok's been giving great answers.
Let Grok do it. So where are you on all this stuff?
Look, I don't think Texas should have done what it did yesterday. On the other hand, if Texas is going to do it, I don't see why any other state shouldn't do it to counteract. I don't like it. I think it's bad. I think it's bad for our democracy overall because it makes everything, it just there's a certain level of over manipulation that really calls the whole enterprise into question or gives it a bad taste in voters' mouths. But I don't see, you know, it's sort of the point you were making before about DC. It's like, once I can't unilaterally disarm, if they're allowed to do this, and there's really, there's no, you know, the Supreme Court has basically said that we are not going to intervene about gerrymandering because we don't have any idea how to fix that. And I think there's, you know, a lot of liberals criticize that ruling, but I kind of sympathize with it because I have no idea what the rule would be to say no gerrymandering. It's easy to say no gerrymandering, but what does that mean? Does it mean you have to draw? Every district has to be a square? It can't be that.
I don't know. I'm open to that. I'm open to have it being geometrically right. I mean, I would say so.
They could end up crossing the middle of a city. It could end up, you know, it's just there are infinite numbers of variables and where people live, and there are historical boundaries that you might want to adhere to, and there's that voting rights. It's very, very unbelievably complicated.
So here's the question I want to ask, because I absolutely sympathize with you that I rebel. I am always very much a small C conservative, which is to say, don't ever change anything, because as bad as things are, if you change them, they can get worse. Right?
Because we're not smart enough to figure out what all the right second and third order consequences are. So let's just change a couple things at a time if you're going to do that, and only fix it if it's really broken.
what would be worse? Is it worse to have California going and doing this bad thing, or would it be worse to not have them do it, right? Because do you create moral hazard by telling the other side, go ahead, monkey with things as much as you want. You're never going to get us to push back against you in the hardest. You see what I'm saying? Like at some point, retaliation is necessary to break out of the cycle.
I absolutely agree. I mean, the reason why people exercise restraint is because of the fear that somebody else is not going to exercise restraint. And, you know, it happens in all sorts of human endeavors. It's the reason why, you know, it's how we survived as a constitutional republic for this long, is that people didn't do all the crazy things that they thought about doing. And right now, we have one side that doesn't think there are any boundaries. And that's a problem.
It was good while it lasted, George. It was good while it lasted.
It was a nice constitutional republic.
Thank you for being with us. Summer is over, officially over. We're back now. It's very, very happy to be with you. Maybe even Sarah will come and make a guest appearance on the show eventually. Or they're going to have to put my picture on the thumbnail. I don't know, one or the other. George, it was good sitting down with you. Guys, we'll see you next week. Good luck, America.
Well, George Conway, he's a man with a plan. Got to sit down with Sarah Longwell, take a stand, explain all the legal problems they're piling high. With Donald Trump, oh my, oh my, oh my. He said, Sarah, let me break it down for you. There's obstruction of justice, corruption too. The legal tangles and troubles, they're growing fast. It's a storm that's gonna last.